Welcome into ESPN FC Daily. Kay Marie and Luis Miguel Echegaray here. You are all welcome to join the party. We're looking back on England's 6-2 win over Iran, the opening game in Group B. In fact, it's World Cup 2023 now, Luis, because of the added time in this game. We have celebrated the new year. Well, I mean, like, initial takeaways from everything we've seen today from you.
That's very good, Kay Murray. I felt like it was more like 2023, the beginning of it. But definitely, if we had all the stoppage time so far from the beginning of this World Cup, we could have a full game, Kay. It's unbelievable. But to your point, let's not get away from the emphatic victory from England and the three lines, as you mentioned, 6-2, the second biggest scoreline in the World Cup. Obviously, the last time they did that, 2018, when they won 6-1 against Panama to close the group. Here, they open the group against an Iran side who, let's be fair, Kay, you know, a team that's dealing with a lot, obviously, the weight of the issues of their nation, not singing the national anthem, obviously, so much going on. But clearly, England on the pitch, a much, much better squad. Every single scorer today, Kay, their first ever goal at the World Cup. Kind of amazing.
I saw that. And it's a bit annoying that penalties don't count as World Cup goals as well. But yes, that's an amazing stat. And it's a great effort from the boys. And obviously, people will say it's going to be tougher along the road, but it's a great start for them. And especially when you see stats when it comes to opening games, if you look over the last six World Cups, only eight teams who've lost their opening games have actually gone on to progress to the knockout rounds. So we'll get to a lot of this game. I know in just a moment we're going to have Shaka Hislop joining us as well. A few of the big points came already when we saw the starting lineup. So the first was that he did go for a back four. We'll get yours and Shaka's opinions on that as well. Phil Foden didn't start the game. We got Bukayo Saka starting the game. We also saw Mason Mount starting the game. Harry Maguire started the game. And we've got to talk about Harry Maguire and Raheem Sterling as well. He did well. Yeah. That's the thing. Harry Maguire putting on that England shirt under Southgate is completely different. It's a different proposition, it would seem. And obviously, in this game, you cannot fault him. He put in a great performance.
Yeah, absolutely correct. It's something kind of incredible when it comes to wearing your national team shirt, you know, and what you do, regardless of what's happening in your club domestic season. Listen, I think the most important component of what we saw today was the fact that because it's a mid-season World Cup, because it's so hot, because it's tough when it comes to, you know, playing right after finishing your domestic campaigns, that every player gets some minutes, right? So Callum Wilson coming in and getting some confidence, you know, the likes, to your point, of Jack Grealish even scoring as well, you know, and commemorating, by the way, that goal. A very short story here. Jack Grealish, obviously, you know, Man City player. There's a Man City fan with cerebral palsy and asked him to do a celebration for him. Jack, his own sister has cerebral palsy. So, you know, he has a strong connection with that and he dedicated it to him as well. So nice little moments. But all in all, a very big victory for England and so good to see the entire squad getting some minutes.
Yeah, absolutely was. But in terms of Maguire, he hit the post. He had that assist for Saka. So now you wonder if Gareth Southgate's been vindicated. Obviously, there's going to be tougher tests, as I said. But I think that in this one, it's so far so good with the Harry Maguire decision. And we'll get Shaka Hislop's thoughts on some of this as well. Seeing all those goal scorers, in fact, just looking at the first time that England scores five goals from open play at a major tournament, that's got to be a good thing because a lot of their goals in 2018 came from set pieces, which is also great. It's fine. As long as they're scoring them, it doesn't matter how. But when they have been criticised, it is good to see them playing some of the football that they were playing today, Luis. A fluid football, dare I say fun at times as well from this England side.
Say it, Kay. Say it. It was fun. Listen, I mean, to your point, right? And also a notable statement here. None of them came from Harry Kane. And he's, you know, we're so usually reliant to see Harry Kane scoring goals for the three lines. And the fact that he didn't score any of them, you know, says a lot about how deep this England team is and how much we see them going so far. To your point, it's Iran. So with all due respect, there's going to be stronger tests. But when you see the likes of, you know, Bukayo Saka scoring a brace and Raheem Sterling and the wonderful Jude Bellingham here, Kay Murray, Jude Bellingham becoming the second teenager to score for England at a World Cup since Michael Owen in 1998. I mean, his stock, Kay, just went up because he is an absolute star. But this is a very good, a very dynamic England team. We just have to wait and see what happens when they face really tough opposition.
I think it was great to see. I can't even believe it's taken us this long to mention Jude Bellingham, actually. The teenager. If you're following the Bundesliga and you watch him for Borussia Dortmund, it comes as no surprise at all what this player brings to a game and the character and the leadership that he has as a teenager, and to be able to come into this World Cup game and score as well to set.
What were you doing at 19 years old, Kay Murray? Were you playing for England?
Not that, I can tell you. Not that.
I was nowhere near it. I was maybe hoping to buy something for my Nintendo game, but definitely not playing there.
No, but it really was great to see his first England goal as well. What a moment to score it, hey. We've got a comment in here. If this didn't feel like a World Cup game, says Ace Stone 8, from the stadium atmosphere, lack thereof, and Iran playing without intensity like they did in 2018. We've got Shaka Hislop here to join the party with us. Shaka, we want to talk to you about a few of the things here that we saw. Who stood out for you most for England?
Bukayo Saka, first of all, comes to mind. Marcus Rashford comes to mind, primarily because remember what happened to both those players after England lost that Euro final on penalty. What a way to respond in the first major international men's tournament since that. And in all honesty, it's difficult singling out anyone as much as I just did, just because I thought England was so much better than I expected. And I know it's Iran, and we can question that all we like, but England hadn't won a game since Cote d'Ivoire back in March. England lost 4-0 to Hungary at home. They'd not gotten results. They'd not played well. I don't think expectation was high coming into this, but this was a performance and a result. I think that kind of will get the English fans, LME, we're not going to call any names, shall we? Going to get the English fans salivating just a little.
I think what you're actually saying there, Shepherd. I think you're saying
what
it's coming
I
home.
What am I saying, Kay?
I mean, that's
just say it, Shepherd. It's coming home.
We're going to have to endure that song yet again.
There's a new
Goodness
version.
Me.
There's a Christmas version.
There's a remix to it now. There's a remix to it.
Is there? Did it really need a remix? Did it really need the original? Let's be honest.
We needed a remix. Got the girls involved as well. The women are in it. It's a great new version. Everyone's
Absolutely.
Older.
Let's get the optimism going. You just fix two.
Let's get the optimism going.
Shaka does bring up a very good point, though, Kay, and it's something that you said before, which is, you know, at the end of the day, right, what England needed after a period of not winning any games, regardless of them being friendlies or whatever, we just weren't seeing any kind of, you know, aggressive development, especially going forward. It was very flat. It was very, you know, sort of, it wasn't impressive. And sometimes that's the most, you know, dangerous thing when it comes to criticizing Gareth Southgate. We worry that you have all this talent. Let's show it, show for it. So yes, obviously Iran is not going to be as strong as other competitors, but to win 6-2 and every single goal scorer is their first ever World Cup goal, and to, you know, almost have 80% possession, a tremendous amount of obviously shots on target, et cetera, is a very, very good thing. Shaka, let me ask you something. What do you make of the formation at the very beginning of this game? Because obviously he's so enamored with the three at the back. This was a flat back four, you know, a triangular midfield with Declan Rice holding for Jude Bellingham and Mason Mount. Sterling on one side, Saka on the other one, and Harry Kane. What do you make of that formation at the beginning?
Obviously, when you see the starting lineup named, question marks straight away. You know, alarm bells ringing. Harry Maguire, how is he going to fare? But in the end, and Iran played their part in this, I think everybody came out playing with a certain amount of confidence, playing far better than anybody expected. Harry Maguire, named in the starting lineup, I think was the biggest shock of them all. Yet, I can't find any criticism for Harry Maguire. I thought it quite easily could have been a penalty when he was dragged down very early in this game. I'm not quite sure how VAR didn't review that. But given the result, let's not harp on that. Harry Maguire hit the crossbar off another set piece. Could have been an even better day for him. As we keep seeing, there will be sterner tests for England. There will be sterner tests for Harry Maguire. And maybe Gareth Southgate will have to kind of chop and change and rotate his squad and figure out how to tactically adjust to better opponents. But once again, given England's build-up to this tournament, this was as good a start as they could have hoped for. They got good performances out of players who maybe came into this, coming into this tournament lacking confidence. They were able to give rest to the likes of Harry Kane and those stalwarts, given the nature of this tournament and how quickly games are becoming. As a first game, I don't think Gareth Southgate could have asked for any more.
When you talk, Shekhar, about some of the changes that he could make, do you think that it is going to be a back four throughout the tournament, or do you think he's going to adjust accordingly in that sense too in the defence?
I don't see any reason to change right now. Stick with the back four. I think England are easily the best team in this group and should get through top. And then it gives you... And then that is a headache for Gareth Southgate. Let's say England win all three group games. I can't remember how I had the draw set up. But then going to the knockout stages, do you change a team and a system that won three group games to adjust to the opponent? That really is a decision that Gareth Southgate will be forced to make. Now, conventional thinking is no. You stick with the team, you stick with the formation that wins the games. But given the nature of World Cups and it being a knockout format, you don't have the wiggle room that you do in a league format in a 38-game competition. So that's one where, and that's why Gareth Southgate gets paid the big bucks.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, K. Murray, isn't it? Really, at the end of the day, when you have this much depth and you think, well, momentum is obviously a key, recipe for success. But what happens in the stages of this World Cup, which is very unique, obviously, for so many reasons, most specifically because of the weather, etc. So all in all, this is a good victory. And now it's up to, as Shaka said, up to Gareth Southgate to see how can I best utilize this very talented, this very deep England squad.
Okay, great stuff. Shaka, we're going to let you go. Enjoy the rest of today's games. We'll be hearing more from you later on the show. Great to have you with us and great to hear that you think it's coming home.
I did not say that.
We've got Gav Marcotti joining us now. We've got one in, one out. Thanks so much to Shaka for being with us. Gav is actually in Qatar. It is great to have you with us, Gav. What's your overall thoughts on everything you've seen so far? Not just in the games that we've seen, the two games so far, but in actually being there in Qatar for the World Cup.
On everything I've seen so far? How much time do you have?
Give us everything, Gav Marcotti. Give us everything.
Look, I think as Louise pointed out, we're in total. This is a World Cup unlike no other. We're in total uncharted territory. There's a whole bunch of issues, obviously, off the pitch. There's a whole bunch of logistical issues. This is a place that, when I say it's a weird place, I say it's weird relative to my frame of reference, and I have traveled quite a bit. I'm not saying the Qataris are weird or anything, but it is a weird place. This is a country where, 90% of the people who live in this country aren't from here. They're not citizens of this country, whether, they're expats to obviously the migrant workers, the people who make everything work. And so you kind of download a World Cup on top of that, right? With 32 teams, all of them sitting, by the way, this whole country is just one city, incidentally, right? Because it's Doha is Doha, right? I mean, you can call it something else, a different municipality, but it's the same thing. It's not like it ends and the other one begins. And it's just such a sensory assault how different it is from traditional World Cups. And I think that impacts everything. It impacts the teams. I saw it yesterday. I was at the Al Bayt for Qatar against Ecuador. It impacts the fan experience. It impacts the fans themselves. This is really going to be...
Does it feel like a World Cup, Gab? Does it feel like you're at a World Cup?
No, it feels completely different from every other World Cup. So this is my seventh World Cup. And it's completely different. And I think there's been some commonalities. And look, FIFA tried very hard to try to make the World Cups feel the same. Where it felt like a World Cup was two situations. One is in Gianni Infantino's press conference the other day that I went to, because all the FIFA media centers all look the same no matter where you are. And I think to some degree inside the stadium it's as well, right? Once the game kicks off in the build-up, it's all very familiar. You know, you had the two sets of fans, both Qatari fans and Ecuador, at least at the start. We know what happened later. That felt like a World Cup. Everything else around it, no.
Let me ask you something, Gab. Obviously, your perception of what's going on, and to your point, is feeling like such a weird World Cup, obviously because of the timing, the location, obviously the issues that surrounded before, during, and after. What do you think the perception of the fan is when you're watching all these fans, you know, arriving from different nations? Obviously, Argentina fans, I'm seeing so many videos of them. No matter where they are, they just want to win this freaking thing, you know, to the point of, you know, Africans and hopefully, you know, getting their team to go further even in the tournament. What is your perception of fans in general when you see them walking around the street or just the sentiment around the tournament?
First of all, you don't see them walking around the streets. Mm. No, people don't walk around the streets.
Too hot.
I had lunch with Herc Gomez today at an Italian restaurant in a shopping mall. We saw fans inside there. Secondly, I wanted to give you a notion about World Cup fans. For me, the World Cup, and I've been fortunate to cover them, this is a giant TV show, right? 99.9% of fans experience a World Cup through television, through screens, right, remotely. And what we have here is just a backdrop. And the type of fans who travel to the World Cup, and I'm speaking in very broad brushstrokes here because it's different for different countries. And it depends on the World Cup location. It depends on the culture. For example, I think in Italy and Spain, traditionally, you don't really, you know, if you happen to live in the city or nearby, you'll go walk. You might buy tickets and go. But generally, like, hardcore football fans don't follow the national team. I know in Peru is different. Obviously, England is different. Scotland is different. It's kind of a, you know, Holland. It's a cultural thing, right? But what you get with the World Cups, and I saw this in Russia, and I see it here, is the people who travel, by and large, especially the ones who travel long distances, have one thing in common. They're wealthy fans. They're not people who, you know, this whole myth of working class culture, you know, you mentioned fans from Africa. I ran into a bunch of Cameroon fans the other day. You know, and I'm chit-chatting to them, and, you know, one of them is a director at the telecoms company in Cameroon. The other one had traveled over because he's related to a player. Another one, I think, worked for the airline or something like that. This is not a cross-section. This is, I think people need to understand this. We're talking about World Cup fans. We're kind of selling a fantasy of what fans look like. And it does get political. I mean, you know this, right? We've all watched this. Ever strike you as weird that you look at the Ecuador fans in the stands or the Brazil fans in the stands when Brazil plays, and then you look at the players on the pitch? They don't always look the same, do they?
I know where you're going there, and it's true. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to cost you a pretty penny to be able to go to a World Cup as well. So obviously that adds to that.
Prices. And I want to make this clear, right? Because I know the guy from FIFA coming on is like, well, do you know how much a ticket to the Super Bowl costs? Like, guys, this is sports. This is the reality of it, right? In the US, they've taken it to a certain level. Beyond this, I think the cheapest ticket for a group stage game in Qatar is around $70. And it's even cheaper for Qataris, which is kind of funny because you figure those are the people who don't really need the cheap tickets by and large, but $70.
And it's also surprising, Gab, just very quickly, because, you know, we're seeing video footage of empty seats, you know, almost always. Not almost always. We've only seen two matches, but I've seen evidence of that. So it doesn't compute, right? There's a little bit of an imbalance here.
So my understanding, the two games we've had so far. So I can tell you, because I was at the Al Bayt yesterday, that stadium was full of kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, and I wrote about this, is on the website, is a ton of Qatar fans left either, you know, beginning at halftime and later, which I thought was pretty extraordinary. My understanding is with England, Iran, that was also a game expected to be full because Iran is just here over the water. There's an enormous Iranian diaspora throughout Europe and in the US as well. You go out to LA, there's a little Tehran, whatever. those who are fans, you know, many have the means to travel and they're keen to travel here. And obviously England fans, you know, a bit like disease are everywhere, right? They'll go everywhere. They turn up everywhere.
And there's a lot of English people in Qatar already.
Yeah. And if they're not here, they're in Dubai, just 40 minutes away or whatever. So I think that might have had to do, and again, I wasn't at the Khalifa Stadium today, but judging from the reports you're getting on the ground, I think there were serious ticketing issues and logistical issues. We're going to find out more. But, you know, further games in the competition, I'm not sure. You know, a lot of times these tickets have been sold, but sometimes people don't necessarily show up because of the difficulties, the logistics. And that's something else to consider.
So, Gab, you're in Qatar. You've got no Italy to follow. I'm sorry to remind you and to bring that up. Which team, which game are you most looking forward to?
Which individual team? Well, I can tell you I'm going to support.
Which individual team have you got maybe a little soft spot for, and which game are you really looking forward to covering?
I'm sad this way. I look forward to covering every game. I can give you a more accurate answer.
Yeah, what a terrible answer, Gab Marcotti. Give me one game.
I can give you a better answer.
Just letting us know, well, I will be at every game. I'm one of them.
Yeah, you show off.
I think once the storylines develop, you know, I like stories. I like moments. And one thing about the World Cup is they can crop up out of nowhere, right? You can go and see a game that looks dull or whatever, and you have an experience that it turns into a World Cup memory. So that is, you know, I like the storylines there. In terms of teams, I will be rooting for Japan because I lived there for 4 years growing up. So there's definitely a big soft spot. I'll obviously be rooting for whoever plays against Germany on the day, for obvious reasons. Beyond that, you know, I'm kind of a neutral.
Well, while we've got you here, Gab, we actually wanted the latest on Cristiano Ronaldo. Before we get to that, let's hear from Cristiano Ronaldo. We are still talking about him. We'll probably be talking about him much more, no doubt. Listen, they asked him whether everything that's going on outside and his issues with Manchester United will have an effect on the Portuguese national team. This is what he said.
Na minha vida, o timing é sempre o timing. Obviamente que vocês estão do vosso lado, é fácil opinar, fácil escrever.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Muitas vezes verdades, muitas vezes mentiras, ou a maior parte. O timing, para mim, é o meu timing. Eu não tenho que pensar naquilo que os outros pensam. Tenho a certeza absoluta que não vai influenciar.
All right, we won't make Gab talk about him for a minute then. We'll let Luis talk about this. Luis, do you think it's going to have any effect on the Portuguese national team? They're all saying it doesn't.
I mean, it does to a certain extent. How can it not? They're human beings and they're reading and they're seeing what's going on. But I don't think overall the specter of, leading up to playing a game at the World Cup, I don't think, you know, it's going to be that much of a disruption. Not, you know, when we look at the world in general and add the context of what Iran is going through, as opposed to like, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo just, you know, going with Piers Morgan and talking about how much he hates United. That's a different context. And I think overall, you know, it's something very important to remember as well, Kay, about the Portuguese national team. They have, El Padrino with them and Fernando Santos, somebody that they know very, very well. And I'm sure he's trying to keep it, you know, very national team centric. It obviously has an impact, but I don't think as big as you would expect.
Geb, I feel as though you've been really quite fair with a lot of the reporting on Cristiano Ronaldo, and you've been able to see both sides somewhat, because we're obviously hearing a lot of people against what he's done. And I feel that everything I've heard from you when you've been on the show and I've heard the Geb and Jules podcast, you've kind of offered more of a balanced view on it all. Has there been any updates? Has there been people talking about it out there in Qatar? Has that focus continued there?
Not the people I've spoken to. Nobody really cares. but what I can tell you, but thank you for your words. I'm sorry. I had a serious problem with everybody coming out and moralizing over this business with Cristiano. I'm going to chuck this question back to you, right? And that's on my show, but I'm going to make a little attempt here, right? Did he say anything at all that surprised you? And did he say anything that wasn't true? Or at least true to him, no, since he's talking.
Yeah, no. In fairness to him as well, Gab, what I will say is the thing that he said that surprised me was that he felt as though he wasn't believed on his personal issues. So yeah. That is a surprise that's not against him. That's the one thing in that whole interview that I thought, oh, wow, really? And it did offer a little bit more context to the situation for me.
Yeah, and he's talking about his own feelings. I mean, I can't tell you how you should be feeling. I'm not inside your head, right? That's the same applies to Cristiano. This is a bad situation. I think he should have moved in the summer. I think it's obvious. The fact that he didn't move, partly United's fault, partly his fault, I'd say primarily possibly his fault, and George Mendes's fault, his agent, the guy who pulls all the strings. Because if you take a pay cut, then you move and you find another club. This business, oh, we didn't have any offers for him. You didn't have any offers at him at full fat. Give a discount, take a pay cut, and you can move and you will have offers, right? So I think that part was pretty obvious. But once we're all done moralizing about how awful it is coming out without the authorization of the club, they should sack them left, right, and center. What are we left with? We're left with, I think, a double positive. After a big negative, we're left with a double positive. Positive for Cristiano because he gets to move to another club, and positive for Manchester United because either now they're legitimized, and if he doesn't accept a move elsewhere, if he can't work out his own deal to leave, I don't believe he'll be able to get any kind of court action to terminate his contract unilaterally quickly enough. But he either sits in a corner and never plays, and nobody would blame Ten Hag if that happens, because Ten Hag is fully justified, I think, at this stage in doing that. Or he's no longer there, and his wages are no longer there, or at least most of his wages. So I think this is a win-win, and United can move on and they can grow. It doesn't mean that he was right to go. I don't even think what he did, frankly, was necessary.
It was entirely
unnecessary. I think it speaks to the bad advice he gets, or maybe he gets good advice and he doesn't listen to it. But, you know, as for the World Cup, I agree with Luis Miguel. Like, I don't think this is going to affect Portugal one iota. They're used to having massive Cristiano drama. They're used
exactly. They didn't just meet Cristiano Ronaldo, okay? Like, they know what's happening. I agree with it. I'm not going to go too much into this because obviously we've talked about it before, okay? But from the Ronaldo perspective, to me, was number one, Gab is absolutely correct. Like, you know, you have to think about the strategy behind the interview. Ronaldo doesn't want to be there anymore. What's the best way to do this? I'm just going to do an interview with already a polarizing figure to just discuss about my grievances. Were they true? 90% of it, correct. And to your point, you know, the personal issues that he had in pre-training in the summer. So that's one issue. The fact is, and I've said this from day one, this was a horrible relationship to begin with for him to return to Manchester United. So it's better for everybody to just part ways. From a Portuguese perspective, they're just trying to focus on the group, and they have one of the best managers when it comes to, listen to me, let's focus on the team and let's move on. I mean, I have no issue with that.
Wait, so you're a big Santos guy?
What's that?
You think Fernando Santos is the right manager, is a good manager?
No, I don't have Portugal getting out of the group. Like, that's...
Oh, okay. All right.
I just think that they know Fernando Santos well enough to make sure that they can just move on. That's my point. Now we can move on, Kay. Enough of Ronaldo. Let's talk. I want to hear Gab's thoughts on England, first of all.
Thank you. I really enjoyed watching England play. Like I've said all along, that Gareth Southgate is a better person than he is a coach, right? I thought England played generally horrendous football at the Euros and at the previous World Cup, and that, you know, didn't play to their strengths and, you know, still obviously did very well. And in this game, you know, when I saw back four, I saw Mason Mount in there. I thought, whoa, what's going on? Is that Jude Bellingham unleashed? Now you can say it's Iran. It's the first game. Iran have their issues, not just the stuff back home. Also remember, like everybody else, Iran has only had, you know, these guys only been together for 8 or 9 days. But I think it was a big vote of confidence for Harry Maguire as well. Does he have something to give? I think he showed that he's up for it. His teammates were comfortable with him. I think you only take positives from this as far as England are concerned. Now, I heard Shaka already saying, like, well, if England win their first, England win all three group games, who do they get? I'm like, whoa, pump those brakes, right? It's very unusual for teams to win all three group games and then go on to win a competition or even go far in the competition. Just check it out. That's just the nature of the World Cup. But I think this is the best possible start. I'm not even concerned about the two goals and then, you know, Azmoun hitting the woodwork. And at the end of the first half, I guess Alireza Jahanbakhsh, when he was wide open, I don't know how he put that side-footed over the bar. I'm not that concerned about that because England generated so much at the other end. I think this is, corny as it sounds, this is a dream start for England. And there's a lot to build on because people are going to say it's only Iran, but Iran are not a bad side. They're a side that I think were made to look very bad today by England, and not by defensive England, let's ping the ball to Sterling and then he scurries away and scores, but by England saying, let's be comfortable with the ball. Let's do our thing. Let's do what we do at club level with our teams. And let's beat you that way because we have more technical players. And they did.
Yeah, I suppose one of the only points of concern, and we must mention it, is we saw the concussion protocol might be a bit of a grey area right now. Alireza Benenvand, the goalkeeper for Iran, having to come off in this game. And at first he was allowed to stay on, then he came off. Not too sure what the situation with Harry Maguire is yet. Obviously, we're coming to you right after the game. Are there a few issues that we're hearing like that, Gab, where maybe there is more of a grey area? We mentioned the ticketing issues earlier, where there needs to be more of a set rule on what is going on, what the protocol is.
Well, we know what the protocol is, right? The decision rests with the team doctor, right? This is not the end. There's no independent doctor. FIFA doesn't get to decide how somebody feels. Even the length of the assessment that, you know, again, I am not a brain surgeon. I am not a neurologist. But from what I read and from what the advice is, it takes a good 15 minutes to go and properly assess somebody. And you're not going to do that during a game. Hence why people talked about temporary substitutions and whatnot. If you leave it up to the teams, you leave it up to the teams. You're putting it on a doctor who is employed by a federation, who is, you know, who's got a natural conflict of interest, but then who you want to leave it to? Okay. Do you want FIFA to appoint, you know, Dr. Doolittle to go and look at somebody and take upon himself the position? Well, you may be fine, but let's just play it safe because, you know, let's take
maybe Infantino can say today I feel like a doctor and do it himself.
Yeah,
I feel concussed.
I don't know that there is a good way to do it. Even the temporary substitution aspect, you know, especially when it concerns a goalkeeper. A goalkeeper comes off for 15 minutes, another guy comes in cold, you know, that's a tricky one. It's almost easier for an outfield player.
The only thing I'll just add very quickly, like I before entering this world of sports media, I was a youth coach for a very long time. And the problem that you have is that this kind of situation that you see in a World Cup match is a ripple effect all over down to young players and young coaches and parents, et cetera, et cetera. There is a lot of misinformation and lack of knowledge when it comes to concussion protocols. And, you know, you can't shake it off. There's multiple concussion symptoms that happen during a course. Whether it takes 15 minutes or less is another thing. The point being is, like, I think at this point, and it's not just the World Cup. I mean, I had an issue watching Aston Villa against Newcastle, and Emiliano Martinez should have come off. He didn't. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of misinformation and lack of knowledge on what a concussion symptom is. Just one should take you away because it's saying you may have a concussion. And that's not happening right now. It's completely being belittled, I think. That's my issue with it.
But then do you want a club doctor who is paid for by the club to go and make that decision?
Yeah, because well, that's another issue, right? But yes,
good. We remember, obviously,
yeah.
because I'm old, I forget if it was 2014 or 2018, but Uruguay, I think it was Pereira or Arevalo Rios, the guy was out. And the Argentine doctor, sorry, the Uruguayan doctor comes in, looks at him, like slaps him around the face a couple times, and he keeps playing.
That's because he's Uruguayan, to be fair, like every
but even today, we saw one of the Iranian players just squirting the water on his goalkeeper's face.
Yeah, like, wake up, get over it, let's go. Come on. Exactly.
But then we have to be sure. Are we sure that he received a knock to the head? Are we sure that the wind was knocked out of it? You know, like I'm saying, like us watching on television, we're also not 100% sure. It's a really tough one. I'm uncomfortable. I know doctors take a Hippocratic oath and whatever. It is a lot to deal with. We put a lot of faith in those people with white coats and fancy degrees who study for many, many years that they're going to take the right ethical decision in it. There's a bunch of people who write books about this stuff all the time, right? Medical ethics and how do you decide in the moment in an emergency situation in front of 70,000 people, the eyes of a nation on you. I don't know. That is so far above my pay grade. I'm not wading into that. I'm going to let the experts go and sort that one out.
All right. Well, we'll let you go and get some downtime, Gab, because we know you're busy. You're going to have to cover all those games.
Wait. Horrible. What downtime? Holland and Senegal kick off in a few minutes. What downtime is this, man? No downtime.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that game a little later on as well. But Gab, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Take care, everybody.
All right. What can we end it on? Who's your standout today for England then, Luis?
Yeah, let's end it on a high, Kamar. Let's talk about it from an England perspective. I mean, this was a very good win, an emphatic win, the second biggest at the World Cup. For all the issues that have happened before, now is their first 3 points of this tournament. I mean, it's got to be, I think, honestly, it's kind of a cop-out, but Jude Bellingham, to me, would be my number one focus because it wasn't just the goal. It was the way that he produced throughout the entire game. I mean, that Raheem Sterling goal was pretty much thanks to him. After Bukayo Saka was injured, Bellingham picked up the ball, delivered it to Kane. Kane assist. He was everywhere today. And for him to be 19 years old and enter a tournament like this and just make a significant mark on the game is pretty amazing. But take nothing away from the overall squad. This was a very good performance and happy days for England.
Happy days for England right now. We'll see how things are going forward. And we'll be back with you a little later after US's game against Wales. We'll also look back on Senegal against Netherlands then too. It is a big day of action and we can't wait to talk about it all. Make sure you are with us for it here on ESPN FC Daily on YouTube.